Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you so much, Dave, and it is a pleasure to be here. Let me tell you something. Beautiful day here in Baltimore. I've got music that goes along with this day, and to be able to say that is such a blessing, honestly. A couple of weeks ago, actually two shows ago, we had some technical difficulties. Well, guess what? One of those songs that we played during the technical difficulty show is going to get played again. One of our hometown heroes, Todd Marcus, is going to get played. And this one, you're hearing right now, Daoud Saeed on the keyboard here, our opening theme, which is called Mainstream. We'll get to more about Daoud in a minute. Let's get to the primary beef of the show. Speaking of which, Lynn Roundtree is not going to like me describing him that way. Maybe he will. He'll be with us next hour. If you haven't heard Lynn Roundtree do his thing, what a trumpet player he is, and making a name for himself. Oh, my goodness. Speaking of which, I don't know of anybody that has made a name for himself more in jazz than this next gentleman. We always like to start off with something straight ahead on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. And a birthday guy, Cannonball Adderley, whose birthday we remember this Thursday, the 15th. He's going to start the show off. Let me just tune Daoud down just a little bit. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
tasty. Maurice Johnson, For You, For Me, from his Tonight CD. And just to tell you a little bit about Maurice Johnson, 1985, he was part of the Oklahoma City-based After Five band, which was huge, sharing the stage with George Benson, Nancy Wilson, Al Green, the late George Howard, Ronnie Laws, a whole bunch more. This man is awesome. On the guitar, he's also a published author, also a founder of a company that built archtop guitars, and got together with the folks that needed to bond with him, and is the designer of a guitar based on a model from Charlie Christian. So this guy has been busy. Maurice Johnson, just really subtle and so fine with how he plays that guitar. He is the leader of Jazz Drops Record Company. So if you want to look him up, check him out on CD Baby or CD Universe. And yes, the mic is open this time. Let me tell you something about me, okay? Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, the name of the show. So I'm Trish. All right, it would figure. I've become so smitten and a little bit intimidated still with Blog Talk Radio that I'm just in love with the fact that there's a mute button. Sometimes I forget to turn it all off and put it on the air. So what you heard for the first three songs, Cannonball Adderley, Bohemia After Dark, which is his first foray in 1955 into the world of jazz, Kenny Clarke. Thank you very much, Kenny, for doing that. Just an all-star cast. Kenny Clarke on drums, Horace Silver on piano, trading off with Hank Jones on piano, Jerome Richardson, Donald Byrd, Paul Chambers, and, of course, brother Nat Adderley on cornet. Just to keep Cannonball in mind, God rest his soul, the memory of his birthday this Thursday, the 15th. And, of course, the show is archived, so it won't make any sense, but that's okay. We're live now. We also heard Todd Marcus and his jazz orchestra based in Baltimore in pursuit of the ninth man, Mala Salama, which means in Arabic, God be with you. And Todd on bass clarinet there, learning so much from his Egyptian-born dad, who has a fascinating story about making his way to America and finding Todd's mom, and later Todd's mom encouraging the father to go back to his homeland, so he took the family. It's a beautiful story. Read about so much on ToddMarcusJazz.com. And Club des Belugas, It's a Beautiful Day, from the CD from 2008, Swap, S-W-O-P. German-based, very popular lounge and new jazz act with Anna Luca on vocals there from Sweden. It's a Beautiful Day. It certainly is. Lynn Roundtree comes our way next hour, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say. Do you realize the buzz on Lynn Roundtree? Oh, my gosh. Gail Johnson was one of those folks who filled my ear about how wonderful he is on trumpet and how he thinks and what he envisions his music to be. We'll hear more about that next hour. Let's jump to Canadian-born Diana Krall, shall we? Did you know that she has sold more albums than any other female jazz artist during the 90s and 2000s? There's more to say about her, but let's just delve into something from When I Look in Your Eyes. Well, Michael Frank's number called Popsicle Toes. How about that? On Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Subtract, multiply, and divide by two. I know today is your birthday, and I did not buy no rose, but I wrote this song, and instead I call it Popsicle Toes. Popsicle Toes. Popsicle toes are always froze.
little toes. You must have been Mr. Olympian with all that amplitude. How come you always load your Pentax when I'm in the nude? We ought to have a birthday party, and you can wear your birthday clothes. Then we can hit the floor and go explore those popsicle toes. Oh, I'm so proud to be able to play that for you. Oh, my gracious. That is the gentleman that does the theme music for Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. His name is Daoud Said, Daoud Said. Now, Daoud is a Baltimore-based artist, but let me tell you something. International stars can live anywhere on the globe. You know what I'm saying? This man on the keyboard is a beast, and you just heard a little taste of that. Brand New Love is the name of that. And this is what I'm going to tell you about Daoud, apart from the fact that he's worked with Walter Beasley, Najee, Angela Bofill, and a host of others. Daoud works almost every day as a keyboardist because he's very much in demand. So if you want a taste of his music, you must go to Reverb Nation and become a fan and buy his music there. He had at one point a website, and as fate would have it, the ins and outs of artists. He has a CD out called India, which is life-changing. I'm not kidding you when I tell you that this man is just unbelievable. He does things on keyboard that I have seen no one else do. And about, I'd say, 9 dozen people can call the show right now and confirm that. Just amazing. So pick up his music if you can at Reverb Nation, Daoud Said. Diana Krall we heard from too. And this lady, it's just amazing when you think about it, the only jazz singer to have 8 albums debut at the top of the Billboard jazz charts. She is being a little quiet these days. I went to her website, not a lot shaken. I don't think she has a whole lot to prove at this particular point after winning 3 Grammys and 8 Juno Awards and countless nominations, but I would imagine that in 2012, she'll have something coming out, and she just did a benefit concert that was an all-star cast for, I believe, Neil Young's school. His mentally challenged son had gone to the school, and Neil Young still does benefits for it. So Diana always likes to throw her hand in whenever she can, and of course she's busy with Elvis Costello and the twins. She's being a mom. We have to say happy birthday to one of our great friends, Carlos Hutchins. He has done so much for music in the Baltimore extended area, humanitarian. He has mentored quite a few folks through the years, been a great friend. Oh, my goodness. His birthday is this day. So happy birthday to Carlos Hutchins. Also, we played Maurice Johnson a little earlier. We had Nick Colleone, another guitarist that you might know, on with us last time around. Nick is going to be at the Schwartz Center for the Arts in Dover. Fall into Jazz is what it's called. It's going to be wonderful because he will be there with my great friends Lori Williams, stunning vocalist, and Benji Parecki, who is another keyboardist that tears up the joint. So Nick is going to have his hands full. That's the Schwartz Center for the Arts. And, of course, NicoLeone.com has the information there. Let's turn our attention to yet another keyboardist. We're going to go back now. We're going to go back to the 90s and the D.C. area. There was a group called Bottomland. And they were known to put together classic and jazz, a little bit of international vibe, and just a special element that sounded fresh. Matt Jones was the leader of the group on keyboard here, and you're about to hear the vocals of the amazing Amakayla Gaston, who I've just rekindled a friendship with on Facebook, and I'm so tickled. She's sending me new music. This is from the band Bottomland back in the 90s. It's going to get to a little bit of a prelude, then a song that Matt wrote called And In on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy with Lynn Roundtree coming up in less than 20 minutes or so. Stick with us. Yeah.
beat her wings. She flies when she is walking. So when she dances, reality falls away. And in her heart, it burns an incandescent fire. Backlit her image shines so deep into my mind. Through her eyes, a light a beam into the distance. So when she looks at me, everything seems so clear. And in her breath, the wind, she sighs the trees to motion. So when she whispers, the sun bows down so slow for you.
Oh, that girl, that girl. Who am I talking about? Esperanza Spalding there on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Had to play that. We played something last week from this amazing CD, Everybody Wants to Be a Cat, Disney Jazz, Volume 1. Just like the old cats used to do, pay homage to Walt Disney and to all the characters in Disney. Esperanza Spalding wanted to take a turn from Mary Poppins, Chim Chim Cheree. She arranged that particular piece. Of course, she's playing acoustic bass, and Gil Goldstein on piano and accordion, just lending this French touch. And through the mix of these various artists, and let me tell you about the artists, Roy Hargrove, Dave Brubeck, Regina Carter, Joshua Redman, Diane Reeves, get out of town. And each of them has something really special from a particular Disney movie. So it just came out this past year. Everybody Wants to Be a Cat. EsperanzaSpalding.com has the information you need. Can you keep up with this girl? I don't know. She is doing her Chamber Music Society tour. It's in full swing. It culminates, I'm so tickled to hear about this, on my birthday on October 16th at the Warner Theater in D.C., Radio Music Society. Her new CD is due out in early 2012. She has been doing benefit concerts, notably for one of her music teachers who really inspired her. She, of course, best new artist at the Grammys this past year, stunning everyone, including those who expected to get the award. But never mind. Esperanza Spalding is here. So are the angelic, that quality of Amikayla Gaston, which is perfect next to Esperanza. Oh, my God, I'd love to see them on tour. Amikayla doing her thing with Bottomland from the late 1990s from the CD Feet of Clay. And in the name of that song, written by Matt Jones, who still plays the keyboard, quite active in the D.C. area. I'm not sure where Amikayla is these days, but she's sending me new music, so maybe she'll tell me. Can't wait to hear something new from her because she's got one of those astounding voices that we love to feature on a show like this. Now, the other side of the voice, of course, is the instrumental magic that is part of this hybrid jazz show. Well, we try to mix everything up so that you hear the beauty of all kinds of jazz. Well, Lynn Roundtree, bless his heart, he has this wonderful, wonderful sultry CD out. In dipping through it just in these past several days, I found a song that I have to play before he joins us on the air. This is one of the new masters on trumpet who studied well, my friend. This is Lynn Roundtree on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. That rhymes. This is called So Beautiful. Thank you. Okay, so let's be real clear about this. What you just heard is some bona fide baby-making music, okay? I'm not going to lie to you. I think even Music Soul Child, when he heard that, thought, I think I'm going to have a baby, okay? The gentleman's name who created that sweet, soulful, and intensely jazzified piece for you is Lynn Roundtree, who's on the phone with us. Lynn, how are you?
How are you?
I'm better now, baby.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, you gave me such an intro. I don't know what else I can say.
Oh, no. You're going to be with us for a while. I need to know everything from soup to nuts about you because
you come
highly praised. What is the buzz on Lynn Roundtree? First of all, one of the coolest names in music these days, Lynn Roundtree.
Well, thank you. And you better watch your mouth, you know, because that's a Shaft type name, you know, Richard Roundtree.
That's right. That's right. But you don't have the D. You just have the N and
I
then
the T.
The D,
yeah. Well, I had to throw that out there because that's the first question I always get. Am I related to Richard Roundtree? And I always say, well, watch your mouth. And then I said, no.
See? And you didn't even get that from me because I wasn't even going to go there.
Well, that's why I said it first. I'm just kidding. You know, I'm just happy to be out here. I know, you know, I've been at this music thing for quite some time, you know, hitting the circuit and starting like most people start and in high school and on through college and, you know, figuring out, you know, the next step to take with music, seeking out some of the older, more established musicians, learning some things from them, sitting in the jam sessions and trying to carve out, you know, my own way in the music, understanding, you know, what my strengths were, what my passions were, how I wanted to present the music, and going for it and doing it. And, you know, it's a progress, particularly in this genre of music where, you know, if you're new, it's probably one of the genres of music where new people aren't given the accolades as quickly as other genres of music. This is a pay your dues type music. So
yeah.
It's certainly, you know, not saying that there aren't any people who've shot up fast, but for the most part, it's a musician's industry, and musicians have to pay dues, and the musicians have to have a stick-to-it-ness about them, and they have to persevere. And that's what it's been for me, you know, with now 3 records under my belt, and I released my first CD back in 2004, Groove Tree.
Yeah.
And didn't even know what I had with Groove Tree until, you know, the reviewers and industry people marked me as somebody to keep an eye on. But it's just been a slow grind, particularly now with all of the stations disappearing and, you know, smooth jazz seemingly going down, which I don't understand because the people, you know, still love the music. And I don't think the people have gone anywhere. I just think the industry's changing. I think there's a lot of factors involved in, you know, shrinking the industry radio-wise. Also, the Internet's got a lot to do with pulling some listeners. But I just don't think the fans have left. I just think the fans are ready for a new wave of people to come in and bless their ears with some music.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'm going to put my input in this because, you know, having been involved with a smooth jazz station a few years ago, honestly, Lynn, the fans haven't gone. Certainly they want something new and fresh and exciting for sure. But, you know, let it be perfectly understood that a lot of these, you know, so-called smooth jazz stations were controlled by a very tiny few who dictated a lot of the time what was going to be. And it didn't reflect the tastes of a large chunk of these stations that have since disappeared. So what happened is that the programming did not reflect the taste of the people who populated the areas. And that turned into their revenue not necessarily being there. It's not that the fans weren't there, as you said. If it had reflected more of the individual cities where the contemporary jazz was playing, there'd be no problem. Now it's a time to regroup, don't you think? It's a time to regroup.
Yeah, can I jump out of my seat and say amen, sister?
Yes, thank you.
You know,
okay.
But, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. And, you know, certainly I don't like to, you know, I'm a musician, I'm an artist. I like to stay focused on making good music for the people. But, you know, unfortunately, you have to to understand what's going on with the business. And I mean, you hit the nail right on the head when you talk about a few people controlling the music and not having best interests of, you know, fans throughout the country. You know, the days of the DJs breaking their artists, I mean, had gone by the wayside. I mean, you know,
right.
And to have your music, you know, I was added to my station, WVMV in Detroit, which was a very, very well-respected and very highly rated smooth jazz station, probably the second or third highest rated smooth jazz station in the country. And my song, you know, the program director didn't just say, hey, you know, I like your song, it's a great song, and fans like it too. They put me on a feedback track, and then they put me in some sort of committee thing, you know, where people came and had a electronic dial, and if they liked it, they turned it to the right. Then they turned it to the left, and they compute all of this information, and then they did the something else with it, and then processed it through, you know, whatever they needed to process it. And finally, it was computed that I had a hit. It wasn't that people liked it or that you know, we just love the way it sounds. It blends well with the mix of music. No, it computed the numbers show that it's a hit. So this is how far we've come in this type of music. Where now, you know, we're relying on data to determine whether or not, you know, people are going to like a song. And I think therein lies the issue.
Yeah. Well, honestly, Lynn, I'm just going to put it out there and say this is the beauty of having a show like this, because I don't have to pay attention to any white guy telling me what is a hit. I can... Thank you. I got ears, and I can play what I want. I have to pay for the show in order to get it on the air, but I would rather do it my way so that people can go, oh, where did he come from? Where did she come from? Where is all this great music that we haven't been hearing for these past several years? Do you know there are artists right now who wouldn't have given internet radio the time of day a couple of years ago? Now they're begging to get on because terrestrial radio isn't serving them. What does that tell you?
Yeah, that tells you a lot, because you know, and it's so funny, it comes full circle, and the more programmers I speak with, they echo exactly what you say, you know, that you know, we now we're starting to get a call from quote unquote big boys, and now, you know, before we couldn't even get an interview, we had a line of managers that we had to go through, record label, whatever. Now these guys are wanting to come on and talk to us. And so, you know, it presents a challenge to some of the more established artists, particularly ones who are used to, you know, a certain living a certain lifestyle and flowing a certain way. But it presents an incredible opportunity for the new guys like, you know, like myself and other guys that I'm coming up with. We never even had that. You know, we're always trying to hustle. We know where the longevity is, and that's by staying as close to the fans as possible, by staying as close to the people like yourself, you know, like yourself, as possible. Having relationships with you, you know, outside of just that, here's a song, and you know, hope you can play it, and here's a couple of bucks. You know, no, we want to get to know you. We want to, you know, develop a relationship, a musical relationship with you for the long haul. And you
that's
know.
Right.
Hopefully, when the thing turns back around, you know, you'll have all these relationships, and everyone will be able to grow together. So that's why I'm thinking it's presenting an incredible opportunity to myself and other guys like that who haven't had the huge record labels and big deals and you know, all of the label support to push out there, and who've kind of been hustling. It makes things real to you, and you appreciate when people enjoy listening to your music, and when people give you a call and say, hey, we want to speak with you and talk to you, and hey, come to our show, come play on our show. That's why we're out, myself and a couple other guys are just out playing as much as we can. You know, it's regardless of whatever budget they may have with the promoters. You know, we're saying, hey, look, we just want to get out and get our music in front of the people. We know that the money will come later. As long as we don't lose our shirts, yeah, we'll get out. We'll get a plane ticket, we'll go out there, and we'll play for the people. And that's what it's about, you know, and that's what it used to be about before the industry turned into a business, you know, with the guys coming up back in the day. I mean, they got out there and they played. They got these bands together, and they hit a lot of towns and played and met a lot of people and created a lot of lifelong fans.
And what happened is, and you know, I hadn't thought about this until you said what you just said, which basically just described customer service, which is what my father did for 45 years at Philadelphia Electric, you know, every day going out there to hustle for his family. And, you know, having worked at QVC for 3 years, they would often talk about the internal customer, not only serving the people who called into QVC, but making sure that the people who worked for the organization were taken care of, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, you just raised a good point, because it has become such a business, Lynn, that instead of relying on the creative process to make the music, many artists in these past several years have thought about what I can do to please the powers that be to make music palatable for them in order to get airplay.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know, how crazy is that?
Yeah, and you know, when I even talk to a lot of established guys, you know, when we're, you know, I'm riding back in the artist van, and, you know, you hear the guys complaining about that. They're saying that sometimes their record label is telling them, well, you got to play this. And I think that's gone on in the industry for years. You know, the labels are always going to push you to try and create something that's as commercial as possible. You know, and that might be cool for a pop star, but when you have a bona fide musician, which a lot of these smooth jazz artists are, you know, it's a challenge. It hurts because, you know, you can play better. You know you have better stuff in your head and you want to articulate through music, but, you know, you're being told that, you know, hey, you got to get airplay, so you got to play it like this. You can't take too many solos. You can't play here. You can't play there. And, you know, to a certain degree, you know, certain things need to be palatable for your fans to listen to. So there's a fine line that you walk between being creative and being outlandish, or being so palatable and so that it sounds so watered down and it's too simple. So, you know, I think that's a struggle with a lot of musicians. And it's tough to hear, though, when someone doesn't even consider, you know, the creative process, when they just go right for the commercial, which I think that's what you're getting at, where they go just right for the commercial and they don't even think about the creative process. Because, you know, in creating my music, I'm always thinking about the fan as well. I'm thinking, well, you know what, I could play a bunch of notes and play real fast or go high here and get real, real down and dirty. But, you know, I want somebody to put the CD on and leave it on and, you know, get them into a mood. And I want there to be some sort of continuity between the songs on the CD. So, you know, also selective about which song goes where on the CD and to be able to take them on a ride. So, I mean, you know, you do have to consider that. But I think when you go right into it thinking commercial, you're already on the wrong track.
Yeah, and here's the difference with you. I made it a point to play So Beautiful as the first track from you that we're going to play, because we're going to play a few so folks can get a feel for who Lynn Rountree is. I wanted to play that because Music Soul Child, it's such a hit for him, that song. And for you to take it and interpret it the way you feel it, Lynn, that's so different from what many other contemporary jazz artists do. They, I've been teasing my girlfriends about this in talking about music. Sometimes when an artist does an R&B or a soulful song, it's like a throwaway. They're not even putting their heart and soul into it.
Yeah.
This stood out.
If I
didn't know it was a Music Soul Child song, I would love that song anyway, because it's so sensual. It's meat and potatoes. It's not just a carelessly put together song, and that's the difference.
Well, and I appreciate that, and I mean that it's a testament to, you know, me wanting to respect the original writers of the song and the person
who
performed it. You know, I wasn't one to do a whole lot of covers, and I felt like on this CD I could kind of branch out, you know, being independent. I said, you know, there's some things that I really want to, you know, some songs that I kind of want to interpret. You know, obviously the Michael Jackson one, but, you know, with regards to music, I loved that song the first time it came on. I loved the vibe. I loved the groove of it. And I said, man, if there's any song that I'd want to do on this tune, on this album that's called Soul Tree, you know, that's one of the tunes that I'd want to cover. And it, you know, believe me, it wasn't coming out of that studio unless I could feel it and people around me could feel it, unless it was top notch. Because, you know, I just think when people write a song, they're writing it for a reason. They're writing it from their heart. And people who do other people's songs and ruin them or make them sound not up to par or they're terrible production, you know, it's just a disservice to the person who, you know, wrote the song. And, you know, I know a lot of people want to hear this. The writers, I mean, walking through the airport, and, you know, all of a sudden the song's coming overhead. And, you know, I'm just thinking, are they going to listen to the song and say, wow, that guy just ruined my song. It's horrible. Or are they going to say, you know what, my sound song, I did write a great song because he interpreted it and it still sounds great and it sounds, you know, even better. I want them to say, wow, this sounds better than my version. That is a beautiful song that, you know, it can be interpreted in such a way. So, and that's what I went in thinking, and wasn't going to come out of the studio until it was there.
And I got that. Matter of fact, I'm laughing because I was doing some research about you, and folks should know that you went to the Duke Ellington School for the Performing Arts in D.C. Now, you were recruited to Florida A&M University to perform with the famed Marching 100 under William P. Foster and Dr. Julian White. So I saw, and I love this, that you learned to the nth degree while at FAMU to practice, to prep, and to perform.
Yeah.
Love that.
That was a awakening when I got from, it was all gravy when, you know, I was recruited to go play. You know, I did the tryouts, and everyone talked about Florida A&M University's marching band and what a famed band. I think at that point in time, they had just come off of doing a Welch's Great commercial and coming from France and Paris and, the bicentennial over there in France, and I mean they were riding high, and for me to go down there, it was great. But the second day I got down there, and all the adulations, and you know they brought you in a little room, you had a tie on, they had little, you know, finger foods, cookies, and they invited all the freshmen in. Oh, you guys are great, we love you, you know, blah blah blah. You're so great to have been able to get here, and they pump your head up real high. And the next day, they show up with a white T-shirt on and some jean shorts, and be ready to work. And that was the most difficult thing I've ever had to go through in my entire life up to that point. And, a week later, you realize that, you know, they were breaking you down. They were really breaking you down and teaching you that, you know, you've got to break yourself down to make yourself better. And that's exactly in order to dance and be a part of this band. You know, it's not a cakewalk. We got you. We appreciate your skills. But we're going to take those skills. Your skills are really rough. You're going to take those skills and fine-tune them. So, you know, that's where I really learned that's where I got my perseverance from. That's how I learned how to prepare, like I said. That's how, you know, you practice, and you're out there. And, you know, they would have these times where they would let you sit out on the patch and stand there at attention if you did something wrong. And, you know, the mosquitoes would come out right after a rain. And I guess if your line wasn't doing well, the line of trumpets or the whole trumpet section was terrible, or the whole band, Doc was upset with the band, he said, just stand there. You know, just, I don't have to say anything. Just stand there and let the mosquitoes bite, because you guys aren't really paying attention. We're not going to let you go anywhere until you understand that, you know, this is a privilege. And those are some of the things that I remember and still still take home with me today, that, you know, that perseverance and that stick-to-itness and how to perform, not just playing the music. They said, hey, you know, you're not just playing music, you're actually putting on a show out here. You know, these people don't know if you're playing this note or that note. Now, of course, we know, but collectively there's going to be a sound, but there's something visual as well. So that's why whenever you see a live show, you don't just see me up there standing around playing a horn. You know, I've integrated some banter with the band. I interact with the audience, particularly if you don't have a singer. You know, people like to listen to words when there's a singer there, but they like to be engaged. They like to be brought into your show. And I bring into the show. And I actually put on a performance, not just, you know, hey, we're going to play the songs and, you know, hit you on the head and good night, you know. No, that's not what you're going to get.
And honestly, I brought that up just because of what you said about so beautiful. You worked so hard, and it was clear that you made it a point to make it a Lynn Roundtree song, as opposed to keeping the vibe of what Music Soul Child intended. And it's also the reason why Gail Johnson, because the other show that I do, I co-host with the creator, Joy Hall, Cool Jazz Conversations, and we had Gail Johnson on one night. Honestly, Lynn, she went on about you.
That's my big sis.
She loves you so much. And she said, oh, you got to have him on the show. My God, is he good. And I thought, wow, that's really something. And then I heard the chemistry that you have. She appreciates the fact that you remember the practice, prep, and perform, because the chemistry that you have on the track of Sultry, and I just hear Kaylin's song. I know there's another part of it, but that's the song, and I told you on your Facebook page, I just cried when I heard it.
Well, I didn't know. I figured that was the song. You didn't say what it was. You were going to leave it for a surprise, but I kind of figured that that's what it was. That that groove, man. And Gail is such a sweetheart. She, I met Gail a few years back, probably about 4 years ago, and she played here in Michigan, up in Lansing. Well, no, actually, she played outside of Detroit with Pamela Williams, and at the time, I had known Pamela, and her manager told me to come out and sit in with them, and I did. And we met each other backstage, and traded information, and found that she was going to be back in Lansing in a few months, and went over to Lansing and saw her. And from there, we talked about doing some stuff together, and she said, okay, yeah, and she invited me out to play with her a couple of shows out in California. And then I said, well, let's do some things together. Let's sit out here. Two is better than one. And, she's always so busy with the Norman Brown tour being the MD. But she certainly is a very, very talented solo artist in her own right. And so when we got together, I said, well, I've got some tracks. And, I think I started going writing tracks that I thought would fit Gail. And she loved a lot of such tracks that I sent her. In fact, I sent her one for her Jazz and Pink group that they play, Got to Be True. And that's one of their hits on their album.
Cool.
And, they're in that whole group with Althea Renee. And, she and I played together for years and years and years, coming from Detroit. And I said, look, I got to have Gail. I got to have you on my CD. She was like, well, only if you're on my CD. that's a done deal. It's a done deal. So, we played on each other's CDs. I gave her some songs and wrote some songs for her. And, she came and played on this song, Kaylin's song, and, in true, and it's nice because there's a woman's touch on that song, and you can hear it, even though she's really, really funky and she's very soulful. There is a touch, just a soft touch that she has on that tune. She doesn't, she's not overplaying it. She's not underplaying it. It's just right there where it needs to be. And I said, Gail, I really, really, really appreciate this. And, we're going to be doing a whole lot more together in the future.
Well, it just seems like there's a natural vibe between you two. And honestly, this is maybe a moot point to some, but whenever I hear that there is a female involved, a name is involved in a song, there just seems to be an extra dose of love. Tell me a little bit about the song and why that came to me, because that's special.
Well, one, I like the groove. I like the beat. Producer named Dana Davis actually came up with the idea for that song, and I was listening to songs. And at that time, I had just had my daughter, Kaylin.
Aww.
And that's, that vibe, just, when I sat back and listened to it, when I get new tracks in or I'm developing a track, either way it goes, I'll make copies and I'll sit in my car, because that's the best way to listen to music in the car. You know that. And I just sit there in my car. I might sit in the garage, sit there in my car and just listen. And that's all. That's what I thought about is Kaylin. And I said, it's got a little, if you think about it, it sounds, there's a little nursery rhyme-ish type clinging in the back, it sounds like a kid. And, it just reminds you of, innocence and, an infant. And I said, wow, this would be a nice song. And so that's really how that song came about. And, I definitely had to have Gail on it because it was a piano-driven song. It's not really a trumpet-driven song. That's why, I'm not afraid at all. Good music is good music, and I'm not the type of musician that says, well, I've got to play on everything. I've got to be the trumpet player. That's why you hear on some of my songs, even with the vocalists, I'm not doing a whole lot. I know I could do a lot, but, the song, I let the song dictate, what I need to do on the track, where I need to be, how much I need to play, how little I need to play, where I need to play. And on this particular song, because it's a piano-driven song, you know, I just let the piano just come out, and I darted in and out with the horn and certain spots, but I just really wanted the whole song, the vibe of the song, to come to life, and that's why you hear it, and that's why you don't hear a whole lot of me on it, but Gail certainly came in, and I heard her piano, because I had been working with her quite a bit, and I knew how she played, and that's why I heard her vibe on that song.
Well, and this is why I need to tell folks, what you've just said is in fact a description of generosity. You're a generous artist, and this is why, you know, George Benson and Tim Bowman and Cameron Dwele and Pamela Williams and Frank McComb have said such good things about you because of that generosity. I'm not going to interrupt too much. This is the only song during our interview. I'll play one at the end, and I'm certainly going to get to that radio remix that you sent to me specially, for sure. But I wanted folks to catch this vibe on Soul Tree from Lynn Roundtree. It's just amazing. This is Kaylin's song with a little help from Gail Johnson on Hybrid Jazz with Trish Hennessy. Mercy. This is one of those songs you never want to end. As a matter of fact, somebody in the chat room here, honest to gosh, Lynn Roundtree is with us here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. And Wes has said in the chat room, this is truly inspired music. I want you to know that, Lynn.
Thanks, Wes. I really, really appreciate it, brother.
And you know what? Honestly, Lynn, this is one of my new favorite songs. What you just heard, ladies and gentlemen, Kaylin's song with Gail Johnson there on piano, that is honestly, that's a bona fide hit right there.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate it. And that happened to be the last song on the that I actually produced for the album. And that song was sitting there, and I had, you know, gotten kind of funky on the album and done some things, you know, soulful. And I said, well, you know, I've got to do something that's really, really heartfelt on the song, on the album, because the album's not complete unless I have something like that. Previous two albums have songs like that. I actually put them at the end. I decided I wasn't going to put it at the end this time. I was going to put it, you know, towards, you know, right a little after the middle. But it certainly capped off the CD, and it was almost like a release. Once I finished that song, once I played the last note to that song, I said, now the album is done. You know.
Well, honestly, you know, you had mentioned in one of the sources that I saw that some of your influences have been, of course, Miles Davis and Freddie Hubbard and Quincy Jones and Woody Shaw, and I saw them collectively smiling down when they heard that song.
Yeah. And for different reasons, you know, different elements of what all of those guys brought to the music. Obviously Miles, because he wasn't afraid to take chances, and he didn't, you know, if you talk about conforming and playing, you know, music, and, you know, back then, if you didn't play the bebop and real fast, and you weren't considered a great musician. And Miles kind of shrugged his shoulder at that and said, well, I'm going to make something, I'm going to call it cool jazz, and, you know, take it in a different direction. I'll play modal jazz, and then I'm going to play electronic jazz. He's first going to start playing on electronic instruments, and talk Keith Jarrett into playing on an electric keyboard as opposed to a piano. And, you know, it's just, you know, everything he would do was constant forward movement. That's what I appreciated with Miles. With regards to Quincy, obviously, he's a super producer. Great ability to put instruments together, to create orchestra, you know, just to create the sounds from the different instruments that he can get, and also produce people, which, you know, I find some of my production as well, my ability to take vocalists and have them, you know, bring out the best of vocalists and have them sing. This is the first CD that I had a whole lot of vocalists. I probably won't have as many on my next projects, but I just wanted to go in that direction on this particular CD, just because that's what I was feeling, you know, and I felt like I wanted to explore with some of these vocalists, and that's where the whole Quincy Jones thing comes in, and Freddie Hubbard, of course, he's just a monster on the trumpet, and, you know, technically as proficient as a trumpet player as you can ever hope to see. Plus, he wasn't afraid to go into the funk and play the funk, even though people in straight ahead jazz were really upset with him for not carrying the torch with the straight ahead bebop jazz. He said, "Look, you know, music is music, and I'm gonna go play funk, and, you know, I'm gonna play R&B. I'm gonna do what I want to do." But no, make no mistake, he was a very technically proficient trumpeter. And, I mean, there's so many more that you can't put in on, if you use one line in a biography. It's so many more. I mean, guys like Roy Hargrove, who's so soulful and funky, and he's a young guy, man. And I really, really look up to Roy, and I enjoy every time I'm able to talk to him and steal some ideas from him. And, you know, he's given me a couple of ideas and things to do. You know, Chris, man, Chris Bode, what a heck of a trumpet player. And a good person, well, at least to me. And Rick Braun, you know, again, I pay homage to Rick, because Rick, he was doing it when there weren't any trumpet players really around. I mean, you had a couple of guys floating in and out, but, I mean, he took that whole Sade vibe when he came from Sade, and, you know, he ushered in the trumpet sound and smooth jazz. I mean, so
and he's,
on
he's
and
fearless,
on and
Lynn,
on.
Because now, you know, he's delved off into doing this new CD, you know,
yeah,
something completely
Christine's
different.
Restrained. Yeah, he's singing with strings. And he's always, the times I've gotten to speak with him, he always talks about Chet Baker.
Yeah.
It was another great, I mean, one of the most lyrical, and I mean, his phrasing, Chet Baker's phrasing and his playing was, I don't even know, it was second only to Miles Davis, you know, in terms of how he phrased his music. He wasn't a prolific trumpet player like a Dizzy or anything, but I mean, his phrasing that he used was out cold, and you know, certainly he sang on that trumpet. I think that's what Rick really looks up to, and Rick's album sounds great. I mean, you know, people are hitting it hard because it's not, you know, they're not expecting them to sing and they want them to play, but you know, you got to keep pushing forward and doing what you think is right at the time, and I think
absolutely,
it's a very appropriate album, and I love it. I mean, you know, Rick's played everything, he's done everything. Why not try this?
And honestly, the more you think about it, the more you understand that these cats who have been so revered for years, who really carry jazz to the greatness of how we perceive it these days, and folks with their doggone categories who just don't understand that at the time that Coltrane and Chet and Miles Davis and a myriad of others, Cannonball Adderley, you know, they have them classified in this straight ahead category. At the time, did they consider themselves straight ahead? Which, if you look at it closely, sort of looks like a conservative element in jazz. Want nothing conservative about what these guys were doing. They were out-of-the-box creators.
Well, you know, I have heated discussions with people all the time about, you know, smooth jazz and what is jazz. And, you know, look, jazz has come through so many changes. It's like you said, it's hard to put it in a box. I mean, the dance music of the day back in the 20s and 30s was big band music. You know, that was the R&B of the day, the rap of the day, whatever. You know, popular music. People went to go hear bebop music, and I mean dance hall, or you know, the big band music, and they weren't playing bebop. There was no bebop. There was no modal jazz. There's no weird notes and fast playing. It was all dance music and people entertaining. The only reason why, and I know, you know, a lot of people have to watch that Ken Burns series on jazz, is the only reason why that bebop even came about is because they were trying to put a tax on nightclubs that had dancing. And so the owners in New York got together and said, well, you know what, we can't continue to pay this dance tax, so why don't we say we have Count Basie's band, take five people out of Count Basie's band, a rhythm section and two horn players, say we've got people from Count Basie's band, we could use Count Basie's name, and they take the music so fast that people don't want to dance, so they sit there, so I'm not a dance club, so I can have musicians here, I can make money, and I don't have to pay the dance tax. That's what really started bebop. And that's, it's not because, you know, there's some big creative genius thinking. It was obviously financially motivated. And so when he brought these guys in, you know, Charlie Parker, Diz, Kenny Clarke, and all these guys in from the Basie bands and got together, they just started tinkering with some of the old songs. So let's take them, you know, up the tempo. Let's do some chord alterations in the chords to make it real kind of weird sound, and they started to discover a new way to play music, and that's where it caught on. But it's constantly evolved, so people, you know, and then before the big band music, there was the blues, and I mean Chicago blues and Dixieland music. I mean, so people say, well, they don't like this or they don't like that, or you know, that's, you know, music constantly changes. So I mean, you know, for the purists, they got to do more of their homework, because I know as much about jazz as the purists do, and am open to any type of music. That's why I listen to everything. I listen to, you know, rock and roll. You look at my iPod, I've got Nirvana, I've got, a lot of the rockers on my iPod, down to reggae music, down to some couple pop songs here and there, R&B. I mean, if it sounds good, I like it. I love to listen to music. I'm just a music connoisseur as well as a musician. And if it sounds good, I like it, whatever it is.
And it's noteworthy to say at this point that, you know, Lynn, you had moved to Detroit. And, you know, depending on where you are, I grew up in Philly, so there was a lot of doo-wop and the sound of Philadelphia.
Gosh, you guys, that soul, man, that deep soul.
Oh, my God.
Philly sound.
Yeah. Man. So, you know, a lot of what people were doing and listening to, it was affecting the jazz. And here you are in Detroit, you know, R&B and the soul mixing in, and you got to pay attention to what individual cities do because, you know, here I am in Baltimore now. Oh, my God. The lifeblood of what people turn out in this city is crazy. It's you have to pay attention to what local people are doing in order for it to translate into the great music that other people besides your city are going to hear. People,
absolutely.
There's a whole lot of music out there that,
You can say what you want to about the rappers, but, you know, if you look at the model, you know, I have to listen to, you know, some of the things that they say, kind of edgy, but, you know, the model and how different, you listen to the musicianship that went into East Coast rap versus West Coast rap and how they put their music together versus Texas and the Dirty South. And, you know, you had all these different elements and they would be, the model is exactly what you're talking about, where in their area they were kings because that was the sound of the music. In New York, they couldn't necessarily get into, you know, what they were playing in the Dirty South, but, you know, what eventually ended up happening is that the radio picked up all of it because it was all good. And then the New York people were exposed to Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre was exposed to Mos Def and what the Wu-Tang Clan was doing. And down south you had, you know, in Atlanta you had the Outkast and all these guys. And that particular sound. And Miami you had the Luke and all those guys. And it was just it was just music. And they were able to put it all together and say, hey, look, here's what we got. And you got a certain sound, but we're going to play it all. We're not going to sit here and manage the sound and make it all sound the same, regardless of where it comes from. And I think that gets back to our original point when we started talking about, you know, the business of music, making music a business versus, you know, hey, look, this is what these guys are doing, you know, in jazz or in smooth jazz or whatever you want to call it, contemporary jazz in Detroit. This is what these guys are doing down in Miami. This is what these guys are doing in California. Let's just play the best of it and see what people, because people will generally like it.
And that's the key word there, the best of, because, you know, there is some fabulous music out there with artists who put their heart and soul into it. And then there is some quite truthfully mediocre stuff that people have been turning out because they can get away with it for years. it's turning away from that now, but that's a whole different story. And as to what you just said, try to someday, Lynn, engage Chuck D in this conversation.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God. He just came to my son's school a few weeks ago, and let me tell you something. He was on fire.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's been like that since Public Enemy days.
Oh, I know. Just talking about the creativity and, you know, that the squashing of creativity and the business and how it has ruined creativity and how we are denying our children music that will empower them as they get older so they can keep their sanity.
Right.
Seriously.
I mean, there's no more programs. I mean, school programs, music programs are disappearing. And droves, you know, it's sad, you know, and at some point, you know, we all have to get together, you know, and start to try and pull back. You know, I do as much of that as I can, you know, try to visit schools and do as many youth days and things of the sort, you know, to just get people interested. And, you know, trumpet is not, at the beginning, it's not the sexiest of instruments because you're blowing and spitting and all that stuff and the guys don't want to see, you know, blowing and spitting while the women are around. They don't think it's cool. That's why everyone picks up saxophone. That's why there's a million and one saxophone players. But
I never thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, and then the trumpet is a very physical instrument. You know, you got to really, really get on it. Not saying that the saxophone players are lazy and don't want to push, but you see a whole lot more of them because initially, to begin, it's just an easier instrument to play, and it's not as challenging because you don't have to buzz the lips. Now, what separates the great ones are people who really get on their instruments and practice and play. But, you know, that's you go and I show trumpet players, hey, you know, this is what you can end up doing, and, you know, this is where I am. This is what I've been able to do. And it just gives them more motivation to stick with it. And I said, please don't turn into a saxophone player. We need more trumpet players.
No, I think that trumpet players, I mean, I'm appreciating more and more what someone is able to do with that instrument because, you know, you really have to go back to your three Ps that you learned in Florida. You yeah. really do have to do the prep and the practice for a trumpet more so than most instruments because a note that you can turn out translates into healing for people. Honestly, Lynn, I mean, you have a grasp of that instrument to such a degree. You've been playing it for a while, but what you're able to do with that creates this healing vibe that people can't discuss enough.
Thank you. And, I mean, the trumpet is people like to say, well, you know, smooth jazz is all saxophone. Well, if you look at the top most requested songs in smooth jazz, number one is Feel So Good with Chuck Mangione. That's a flugelhorn trumpet. Then you have Rise. That's Herb Albert.
Yeah.
And another trumpet player. And then you have Miles Davis' Human Nature. And, you know, it seems like the trumpet players, when they're there, they get, you know, Rick Ron is, you consider at the upper echelon of the genre. Same thing with Chris Botti. I mean, you can't even touch Chris Botti now. He's in a different stratosphere as far as what he's doing with the Boston Pops and, you know, Sting and Jill Scott and everybody, you know, he's doing his things with. So, I mean, you know, I don't know why there aren't a lot more trumpet players in the genre or attempting to do it, but my suspicion is that it's a difficult instrument to really master and on that level. And I think a lot of the trumpet players who have mastered it end up playing the more straight ahead avant-garde jazz because they're just good, and they think that playing the smooth type jazz or soul music is a little watered down. And so I think that's what you have a little bit of that as well. But it's just tough to get a good, smooth, clean, sensual sound. And then horn, it takes a lot of work, a lot of practice. And you can't sit on stage and play all night like a saxophone player. You know, saxophone players can play a lot longer and harder and, you know, just play with all amped up instruments. Well, with a trumpet, you know, you're primarily getting your notes from your lips. And your lips don't have those strong muscles, and, you know, they've got to take breaks. And so you have to learn as an instrumentalist that you can't battle with, you can't compete with all of the saxophone players and, you know, wail and all that stuff. You have to pick and choose your moments and understand the songs you can play, understand how to play it. And that in and of itself is an art as well.
Well, and that's why I appreciate Cindy Bradley because here's this little girl and she's blowing that horn. She really has studied very hard and, you know, has been through, as so many other female instrumentalists have endured, you know, folks questioning her ability or questioning why she even considered to play such an instrument. But, you know, you're right. It's something that requires strength and consistency. And, man, hats
Cindy,
off to Cindy you.
Gets
a, and
gets
notice.
A great sound. It's got a great sound.
Oh, yeah, especially on this new CD. It's a whole nother endeavor from her previous effort.
Yeah.
Lynn,
yeah.
Trust me, she really went back to her conservatory roots and and blew some people away with some of those songs on the CD. So I'm really proud of her. Besides, she lives in New Jersey, so I'm especially in love with her.
we've talked about possibly getting together, so, I mean, it's...
Really?
It would be, I mean, all these saxophone players get together. I mean, you have sax packs and, you know, guitars and saxes and sax, pull up sax, like everywhere sax. So, you know, reaching out to some of the trumpet players, hey, let's get together and do something, all three of us, all four or five of us, whatever, you know. But
that would be
you know,
wild.
She gets a great sound and, you know, on her horn, and I think she's got a great vibe. And, you know, even you can see there where people are saying, well, you know, why is a woman playing the sax or the trumpet? Why is she playing the saxophone? She looks, you know, because now that there are more women saxophone players, you know, it's a sexy instrument. You know, I think women look sexy doing anything. That's just my personal. I'm a little biased, but, you know, if they're playing anything, they're sexy to me. But you know what I'm saying? You still have that trumpet versus saxophone thing, you know, and Cindy certainly makes that look sexy, so.
Well, she doesn't, and I haven't heard anybody say that they see her spit when she plays. I'm going to have to keep that in mind when I see somebody next time.
No. I'm talking about the beginning. When you're at the beginning, is you're spitting into the horn, and you got to, you know, you're blowing the spit everywhere, and you're buzzing your lips, and you know, you got the little spit valve, and you know all that. Not that the saxophone players don't spit. I mean, they gotta put the reed in their mouth and slobber all over the reed. You know, I have fun because I travel with a guy named Milan Trotman. We're calling ourselves New Kids on the Horns.
And, oh, my gosh. Is that what you're calling yourself? That's funny.
That's what we're calling ourselves. If you Google it, you'll start to see a lot of our stuff all over the place, YouTube. And we decided to just team up because Milan Trotman is a great artist in his own right. And,
yes.
You know, being a saxophone player, he's got to differentiate himself as well. So, I mean, and he's an outstanding saxophone player. He's got a hit song out there with Brian Simpson, and he's doing some stuff with some other guys, Peter White, and but we've got our own thing. We've got a single actually coming out. We did a cover of Stevie Wonder, The Wonder's Ass, which is a beautiful
song.
Oh,
really? Fabulous.
Oh, yeah. We did a cover. It just went to radio yesterday. And,
excellent.
I should have probably sent you a copy, but I'll send you one as soon as we get off here. And
speaking of which, I want to make sure that we get to your remix because Nate really did some time with one of the songs from Sultry.
I want to talk about him as well. I mean, Nate Harrison, you know, who lives an hour north of me, and I didn't even know. I mean, you know, he's one of the young guys coming up. He's with Trippin' Rhythm Records, and he's producing a lot of people. He produced a cut for that Marcus Miller and Dave Koz cut on Dave Koz's new album. He's got a number one hit with Steve Oliver. He's just a great, great producer, got a great ear, and his own music, his own CD is fastly hit the charts and going up, and he's just a great up and coming producer. I mean, they're comparing him right now to the Brian Culbersons and the Lorbers of the world. And so, you know, him being, I saw it on Facebook. It's funny how Facebook is. I saw that he and another guy that I play with sometimes, I've known another sax player named Phil Denny, were down in Detroit, you know, having a couple drinks, and they were on Facebook saying, "Hey, we're out in Detroit." I'm like, "What? You guys, what are you doing in Detroit? You know, I want to come down." I said, "Well, you know, I live up the street." I said, "Who knew that?" And so one thing led to another. You know, they're actually they were in Detroit looking for a venue for a show, and they invited me on the show. We did the show. And I went to the studio, and I said, "Wow, you know," and I've heard his name, and I've seen him producing for all these people, and I didn't believe he was right in my backyard. So I said, "Hey, look, you know, I'm going to radio with this next tune. You know, I didn't know if you got the original version, Trish, if you got the original version. It's a real soulful version of the song, but I felt like, you know, I wanted to – I got Nate working on my new project. We're going to work on a new project. It's going to be a really funky project. But, you know, I said, "Hey, this would be a good time to kind of do a remix on this song, you know, and get a Nate Harrison vibe on it. It'd be real cool, real cool." And that way the programmers have two versions of the song, you know, to push. And he said, "Yeah, let's do it." And that's how we came up with this track, but produced by Mr. Nate Harrison, who heard and added some funk to it. And we just played it live on a show I did in New York with Alex Bouillon, and he brought the way we did it, and we got to the funk part, man, brought the house down. So it's definitely a keeper.
Oh, that's awesome. We're going to go over our show. We want to make sure we play this. Lynn Roundtree is our guest here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, and this is the radio remix, which is going to drop soon. You can tell me about the date right now. This is I Didn't Know.
Thank you.
Lynn Roundtree, you were grooving out to that. Oh, Lord, that was tasty.
Thank you. That was Miss Althea Renee on flute as well.
Yes, yes. I'm so glad that the remix still has that. She's just wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. She's one of the funkiest flute players out there. Hear her play. Have you heard her live yet?
Yeah, it's just so neat to be able to talk to you. I thought that we were going to have fun, but I didn't know it was going to be this much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a great time. I had a great time with you, Trish.
Well, look, I appreciate you taking the time. I want to make sure, and you would mention this, but I will. I love the fact, and I'm going to let you go really soon because we're already over. You play annually the Santa Trumpet Man to help women's shelters who are victims of domestic abuse in Detroit. Just tell me a little bit about that, because I love that, Lynn.
Yeah, it was brought up to me that I didn't even know about the women's shelters for battered women, and they've got some in Detroit. I'm sorry, it's most people. They've got some in Detroit, and somebody brought that to the attention that, you know, these women are there around the holidays, living in this shelter, and obviously we've been through some tough and difficult times, and someone asked, could I come play, and just raise their spirits up a little bit. And I said, well, yeah. And then we had this idea, well, why don't I dress up like a Santa Claus and then bust out and play the trumpet too? And we were just joking with it. And I think somebody, the planners overheard and brought the Santa suit and said, well, I thought you were going to be the Santa Claus. I said, well, no, I'm coming to play. But they said, well, we heard you say Santa Claus. And I said, well, if you want me to do it, I'll put it on and play. I don't have a problem with it. So I ended up doing it. And, when I was a Santa Claus, obviously they knew I wasn't Santa, but they were so happy anyway. They had their kids there, and just to see the Santa come in, and then it just took it over the top when I took my trumpet out and started to play. And so they've got the trumpet playing Santa, and that's how some of these kids would come to recognize me and know me every year is Trumpet Santa, and he's coming to play for us, and we're going to tell him our wishes, but it's just something that because these – at that time of year to be displaced from your home because of abuse and you're going to the next phase of your life. And this is a transition from that point in your life to get your own 2 feet and taking care of yourself, whether it be mentally or physically abused women. It's just something to be able to bring them just a sliver of joy at that time of year. And it just makes me feel good. And I like to do a lot of stuff like that because, this musical gift is not ours. This musical
That's
gift
right.
is ours to give. It's
right.
ours to give. That's why we were given the gift. We weren't given the gift to sit in the house and play to ourselves. We were given the gift to inspire and help people. And that's what I think, is expected from us when we're given these gifts. So certainly I'm not selfish. And, certainly I think that my blessings come from my ability to share with people like that because, you continue to stay blessed as long as you give and you give to other people. You will always be okay because, your gifts have to stay solvent. And that's going to always happen when you're using your gifts to help people.
You're going to be held accountable for how well you use those gifts. And I'm so glad that you said that because, honestly, that was my last question to you. What do you perceive your future to be? Your future is going to be whatever it's supposed to be. That's for sure, because you're paying attention
exactly.
to where you're supposed to be and how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, and they're bumpy roads out there, like with anything in life, and certainly. But my ultimate goal is to just be able to get my music in front of as many people as I can and play and experience the joy of them listening to my music. Personally, so I think that's one of the goals that you probably will never achieve because everyone's not going to be able to hear you, not going to get everywhere. But it's certainly a goal that's worth it once you achieve it in series and stages, and you see the people and they come up after your shows and they tell you stories about how your music helped them through a tough period in their lives. And I mean, and that's really what keeps you going with the music, and that's why I'm here. That's what I always do.
Well, God bless you. We have an expression in Baltimore, You got to believe, hon. And I believe in you, Lynn. And honestly, this is one woman crying in the wilderness of doing internet radio, but I'll do what I can to make sure I support and help you as much as possible.
I'd like to say thank you to you as well, Trish, for giving people the venue, giving artists like myself the venue to be able to talk and get have people know, you know, who we are and what we're about, and just expose people to our music. Because without you guys, seriously, you know, we would just be sitting at home again, like we didn't want to be playing. You know what I mean? Making the music in ourselves. But without you, you are essential to who we are and where we go in the future. So, anything I can do to help you, if we're in the area, you know, if you've got something going on, I'll let you know. You let me know, we'll hook up.
Oh, that would be absolutely wonderful. As a matter of fact, some folks are going to be listening to the archive show, because, of course, the show is going to be accessible to anybody who wants to hear it from now on. So don't be surprised if you don't get a call from some promoters in this area and in the D.C. area to make sure that you're booked in 2012 somewhere.
Well, good. Because I've been to Blues Alley a couple times in the last
Woo-hoo!
Last year. I was in Blues Alley twice, and I may be back down next year, or maybe down at the Birchmere or something going on, try to get something in Baltimore. But yeah, I've got some good people to play to down in that area.
Well, matter of fact, I have a name for you, and I'll send it to you via Facebook, but you should be playing at Ram's Head in Annapolis, and I think that you will be in 2012.
Well, we look forward to it, and we'll come with a big smile and a bunch of CDs for you.
Okay, that sounds great. Lynn, thanks so much for the time. You were wonderful, and we'll talk again soon. And you had told me that you were going to send me a little something. Send me that, because I want to make sure that you're, as we expand this show, and that's the idea of expanding this particular show to maybe 3 hours twice a week to give people more music, you'll be in a regular rotation as much as I can help it.
Well, thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you, too. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Lynn Roundtree, let me tell you something. It's just a revelation to be able to speak to some of these artists who are not yet household names but have created such a buzz that they're just on the verge. Let me tell you, it's going to be really wild to see how the journey goes for Lynn Roundtree, and we look forward to talking to him again. Let's do this, shall we? Let's just make it a point to have a little bit more Daoud Saeed in the background here while we tell you that next time around on Thursday from 2 to 4 Eastern U.S. time, it's going to be the regular show, Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. But what we're going to do in the 3 to 4 o'clock hour is have someone whose name you might not know, but you will. Anita King will be with us, who's based in the D.C. region, and she is a phenomenal singer, and she's going to be doing a very special benefit for the musicianship, and she's going to tell you all about that. We're going to play some music. We're actually going to play a couple of songs. People that Anita reminds me of in the way of old-school jazz vocalist. It's going to be quite a different show, because she's a real good friend of mine and a formidable talent, and it's just a pleasure to be able to present her. Thanks to everybody in the chat room today, notably Wes and Griselda, my sister friend, and for those folks who are guests who are not saying their names, we love you as well, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a wonderful day. God bless you. Thanks for supporting the show. And check us out on Thursday. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.